How is the Lions team shaping up ahead of the first test with New Zealand? Who are the Māori All Blacks' key players? And Rog tells us about working with Joe Schmidt. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. And he's brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
I know a website you use most often, but it's a sister of YouTube.
Hi Rob, Zeebs here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next year.
He's calling.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
I'd say YouTube is probably YouTube.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Joe. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Producer Joe Harrington sitting in for Andy McGeady today. And I have Rog, Kevin McLaughlin and Pat McCary in studio. We'll have Andy Rowe on the phone later to get some insight on the Māoris. And Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes will also be joining us on the podcast today. Gents, good morning to all of you.
Hey, how are you?
Rog, we haven't had you in for a while. You were away in the States and... Yesterday it was you were in town with that your buddy Dan Carter. What were you up to?
There was the launch of the SOFCO Foundation, which is a technology company, software company, basically pledging an awful lot of money to three really important charities: the Crumlin Fund, the Injured Jockeys Fund, and for cancer research. So. Yeah. Jim Coffey, the CEO of SOFCO, I think has just given $250,000 towards these charities. So he had a big golf day in Dunleary, and Dan is the international ambassador for SOFCO, so he was in town getting grilled by the local media, and yeah. I was a tag along.
Yeah, are you boys golfers at all, no?
Well, kind of. I have a thumb injury from my extensive training in the US, so I got taken out by Gary Ringrose off a good hit line that I ran in training, so I can't grip the club. I'm icing it and game readying it every free moment, so I didn't play golf. No, I was kind of meeting and greeting. That was my role.
Do you play, Kev?
I don't play actually anymore. I used to play a bit, but I'm the exact same. My body's just a bit broken from all the injuries, hip injury, knee injury, shoulder injury. So I haven't swung around since I retired.
Yeah.
But no, I think I hopefully will get back into it at some stage for sure, yeah.
Any really good lads in the Irish camp that you remember?
Johnny's very good. I think
Luke Fitzgerald was very good, wasn't he?
Luke's good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When he threw the club 150 yards. It was Rory McIlroy was there. And
was it Rory McIlroy was giving the lesson?
What was that? Yeah, that was some. He came in for a chat to Carlton House.
Yeah, and everyone stepped up and hit their best drives, and Lukey stood up.
I'll show you.
Real poker face, real serious, like expect to absolutely spank it. And absolutely airballed it, let the club go 150 yards down the middle of the fairway. And this is on video and all over social media. So if anyone hasn't seen it, it's worth a look.
Yeah. Rog, one other thing I wanted to mention. I saw you tweeting a photo there last week of one of your sons playing rugby. It was supposed to be an under-8s match, but there was definitely a Georgian prop or something playing with him, wasn't there?
Yeah, I don't know what nationality we're made of.
Saakashvili's son.
No, I think there's a little bit of island blood in them as well. So it's good to see that the Fijian passports get manipulated underage as well.
Your sons are playing away over there anyway, are they?
They are, yeah. But after seeing this, I might review it because they might have to go by weight. The way the New Zealanders do it, because if this guy landed on him, it was all over.
If he landed on any of us, I'd say it'd be all over. The size of the
It's worth a look, in fairness. It was just not. My wife didn't say anything. She just sent on forward photos to me as if it was just as you do from your husband to wife, get a few photos every day. But I was kind of there. Have you not looked at this photo?
Get him off the pitch.
Ooh, the big lump. I was there. Yeah, well, I think.
Yeah, he's blocking out half the.
We should have a little bit more care for our son. I think it's
Yeah. The fear in his face is absolutely brilliant. The story has grown arms and legs because we don't have an after shot. I asked him, Dad, or I said, what happened? And he goes, I got him a great rafu, which is a handoff in French. Oh. Is there? You didn't. Dad, I did. He's on the ground. No, I think you might find you're on the ground.
Yeah. It was a big challenge for me anyway. Just wanted to chat to you about the week with Ireland. We were looking at photos here actually the other week. Info stuck up some photos of you and Joe chatting, and we said you looked like a child on Christmas morning. You look so happy in there. You really enjoyed it.
Yeah, did you? I did. Yeah, exactly. It's. I think the first thing was you go back to Irish camp. I haven't been back for four years, and it was just so exciting, refreshing. Gave me all the old memories came flowing back. It was the same rooms that obviously in Carton House when I was a player. The layout of the room was different, but once you went in there, it was back in Irish camp. This is unbelievable. Just the attitude of the players, I think, was something that struck me, as Kev would know from working with Joe. Just the minute you come in, it's, I think in our day it would have been flat whites all round and a few good stories from the weekend. It was straight to laptop for guys, work. You know what I mean? There was plays to be learned. Joe was fantastic. I think he'd given every player that was in camp, he'd made a personal video for them. A work on video or his moments, he called it. So looking at things that they're doing well, I think it's great because in Irish camp he has different rules as opposed to provincial rules. So Joe gives them, I think, certain areas Ireland want to play, and they have to be really good in this area. And then there's work-ons that he needs them to get up to speed on to be able to play or continuously perform in a green jersey. So the lads were looking at their video, and that was a kind of a conversation starter, he said. Yeah. So you look at that, and then you come to me and we discuss how you're going, because it's great. I think some people, we are all like it as players, you have a different idea sometimes that I'm really good at this, and then you look at the video and you kind of go, oh, maybe that's not as good as I think it is.
Yeah, that's crazy level of detail. Kevis, you would have experienced that as well when you came in at Leinster. I mean, a real eye-opener for you lads, was it?
Yeah, it was. And like, to be honest, when he first came in, we were all kind of looking at him funny, going, who is this guy? And it was something none of us were used to.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, like the thing is, like, none of us had really heard of him. Issa had brought him in. Issa knew him and brought him in. And like, he'd suggested to Mick Dawson that we bring him in. He came in and just started shaking everything up and changing everything. And it was really difficult and challenging for him and for us, because we lost our first four games in the Pro 12. And everyone was questioning everything. And the thing about Joe is he makes you question yourself, and he makes you question everything
you're
doing.
Sorry, Kev, to interrupt. That's such, I think, an important point. Okay, like, it's not just a statement. They'd lost four. Like, there'll be panic creeping in all over the place there, like, because you have good players, isn't it? Four out of five. It sounds, now with hindsight, but put yourself in the time period, I presume everyone was completely rattled, because they weren't European Cup games either.
No, they weren't. And, like, there were games we were expected to win. We didn't know which way to look, to be honest. Because, like, we were looking at this guy, and, like, Issa was swearing that he was amazing and everything. And he was completely changing things, changing the way we'd done everything, changing the status quo. Yeah. And, like, you know, in sporting organisations, you're resistant to change, and you begin to get used to things. And we've been used to checks, had been with us for, like, 4 years. We'd done things in a certain way. And suddenly Joe was coming in and saying, no, that's different, that's not good enough. And that is really easy to do, to make change if you're winning and everything's going well. But he had to back himself and keep driving it and believe. And I'd say he doubted himself as well. Yeah. But I think a lot of it was an adaptation period for us, and us getting to understand what he wanted. And having chatted to, like, Paulie and Rog and some of the lads who came into Irish camp. And so, like, Rog has seen it now from a coach's point of view. But some of the, like, established Irish players that came into Irish camp and were used to the way things were done under Decky and different coaches like that. Adapting to Joe, it was very, very challenging for them.
Is that the workload, though? I mean, like, it sounds like the level of detail that goes into is crazy. So you get a lot more homework apart from the training. You have to study yourself a lot more as well, do you?
Yeah, you do. Like, the level of detail he expects you to go to. But he, I think I used to feel when I go from Leinster into Irish camp, I'd almost feel it was a more relaxed atmosphere. And the pressure was off to a certain extent in some ways, going from Joe to Decky. And then it probably should be the opposite way. And I think Joe realises that he stepped up his intensity since he became national coach. Right, okay. So when lads go for the provinces and national, everything's up a step. And that's the way it should be. You should be feeling uncomfortable. And I think like Rog is probably the best person to speak about it because you've just seen it like firsthand what it's like when you step in there.
Yeah, it was, exactly. But I was kind of depressed going away. I was kind of hoping that something's going to happen. They're going to bring me to Japan. It was weird. I kind of took myself back. I felt like I was being dropped. It was all agreed, but like the competitor inside me, I had such a good time. The atmosphere he created to perform, you're in your own little world. I wasn't doing that much coaching. I was watching him. I was doing a lot of chatting with the assistant coaches, and I was obviously doing a fair bit of work with Joe, but Joe is just so thorough that he has an answer to everything. You might suggest something and you get put in your place pretty quickly in terms of, yeah, Rog. But
put on the shaggy hat.
But it was just, I think if you're a competitor, it's such a great environment. I just think your capacity to grow and be challenged is something I've never seen. And it was just, I think playing 10 for that team, the great thing for me about the whole 2 weeks was the fact that three or four times every meeting, he stressed that you guys have the capacity to play what you see in front of you. If there's space there, you can go after it this way. If there's space there, you can go after it this way. So you either go through them or you play to space. So one of my fears, I think, going into it was like, because I was a complete outsider, was the fact, are these guys completely programmed and do they have to play this way every single play of the game, which I would say is great, but it wouldn't be the most enjoyable in terms of having to do that for 9 or 12 months of the year. But you know what I mean? I think what Joe and Kevin would know better than I would, the fact that I think he takes so many parameters out of the game for you to have a poor performance. So if you're a good rugby player, you have an environment to perform under Joe. But if you're a really good rugby player, I think he just makes it so much easier because you can play the way he gives you an advantage with the mapping the game and also being able to play what you see. And I think the great thing about the USA game was watching it live with him. He didn't budge when Joey Carberry had two charge down because he thought the decision was good, but the execution wasn't.
Okay.
And I think we coaches kind of go, oh, 7 points there, you can't do that. Joe just kind of smiled and just said, he learned from that.
Yeah, how was Joey after that? Because he got really criticised here at home.
Yeah, which is so disappointing, I think, because he's playing an awful lot of his rugby at 15. I think he really is a smashing rugby player. You work with him up close. I think his legs are long. He has great levers to kick a ball, to run the ball. He gets excited when he gets the ball in his hands. I would say one of the kicks was a poor decision, poor execution. One of the other kicks was poor execution. But the disappointing thing would be if he played this week and he did it again. I don't think there's any chance of doing that. He's a really quick learner.
Right.
I think he made two costly errors, but the result was never in doubt. I think he learned from that. But to say he had a very disappointing game, I think just completely misses the point. You know, he kind of identified where all the space was on Earlsey's wing. I think you look what happened. Joey Carberry was playing 10. I think Keith Earls had the most line breaks by a tier one player, I think, since Opta invented stats.
He
had one kick that did work to him that paid off, and Earls got it as well. Like, you know, because you could actually see there was an idea that this is where we're going to exploit them, or there's a gap here. Like, and I think it was the fact that, because he gave away another one, we kind of grubbered it and they lost possession as well. So it was four. I think it was the fact that it happens two and three times that was probably the disappointing thing. Like, but and then people added that to the missed goal kicks as well, and he got a bit of criticism. But the fact that Eddie O'Sullivan was coming out saying he doesn't expect to see him in a number 10 jersey again is a little bit extreme. Like,
that's a pretty horrendous assessment, I think. Like, the fact is, they're playing against USA Eagles, and he was given license to try things, and he tried things, and like some things come off, some things don't. But like I think Roger will agree, he's a great player to play with. Like, he'll try things and he'll put people in space and he'll make things happen, and he's going to be a super number 10.
Absolutely. Like, he's 21. I think people missed the point, you know what I mean? Like, if last 12 months ago he was starring for Clontarf, look at his acceleration this year, you know what I mean? He's starring for Leinster when there's seasoned internationals playing all around him. And I think if he continues to go the way he is,
I got a bit of stick for comparing him to Beauden Barrett, but I think, you know what I mean? He's 21. Let's see where he is when he's 26 and he has another 6-7 years at the top ahead of him.
I was just going to say, Rod, you were saying that like you had this incident with Ringrose where you were playing the line. Did you get to play in a line against Carberry then as well, like in training runs?
Yeah, he was. I was defending a lot of 12, so I'd say they were pretty fearful of me at 12 in the D-line. So I didn't have a rash as what was going on. They were kind of... Yeah, but Gary Ringrose, when he's coming at you, I was really impressed with him.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It's the same as Keith Earls at that age. I think why these guys stand out is because of their personality or their attitude or their character. This guy is so humble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. You forget... you know, I think it was that just the refreshing attitude. You hear an awful lot about the new generation coming through, but every single one of these guys on the tour were just so humble, so respectful. It was a joy to coach them, to be playing with them. There was a great buzz, great energy. It was, you know, doing skills with them, even kicking. They were just, it was, as Kev will tell you, that in training is the intensity is high, so you're blown, you know, and I was probably blown more than they were blown, obviously, because I'm not in the shape they're in. But it was just so fascinating, as once the first ball goes down, there's kind of like there's a bit of panic sets in, and that's when Joe comes into his own, because he wants to create really hard training conditions for them. And you could just see the guys that aren't used to pressure kind of folding up a bit, you know. It was just fascinating psychologically.
Very quickly, any chats about doing stuff in the future? What was that conversation?
I'm available for selection. No, that's my work experience over. It's, you know, I think it was great for me, because I think you always be putting yourself in the boss's shoes and wondering would you be able for it, and that came. It was definitely a thought, but kind of this level could be too much for me. And no, it was great. I absolutely loved it. And it was just, I think it was important for me to taste it, because you hear so much about Joe, but I think to give an honest appraisal of him, you need to spend time in camp. And I got 2 weeks with him, and I got to see what he does. But the guy has some energy and enthusiasm and love for the game. He just absolutely eats and sleeps and drinks rugby.
Are you going to be able to bring any of that to Racing?
Yeah, I am, Kev. I think that's crucial. I would think, as you said, for his, you know what I mean, for the first, whatever, 2 months at Leinster and your reaction. Imagine doing that and trying to translate it into French. But he has some points, I think, that are just... I think, obviously, his massive area of strength is his coaching of the ruck. I think that can be hopefully implemented. But obviously you have to understand why they're doing it. But I think he just makes the game very simple, and then obviously the scraps element, stuff like that, which decide, I suppose, games at the highest level, the 50-50s, the scraps, the high ball, the stuff he put, the not being counter rocket in the wide channel. There are definitely massive learnings from him, but I think if you kind of try to copy him, you get eaten up.
Are there simple principles that you can just actually translate to anyone?
Yeah.
Like a lot of those principles, like you're talking about there, some of the simple things like can actually be used at any level in the game.
Yeah.
And something you can just implant in people's brains, so they know in certain scenarios, like, it's my job to protect this wide ruck. Like,
and that, I think that's why he's so fascinating for not only sport, I'd say, but for business, as you say, his principles. It's kind of... Not alone is it the training hours that it's impressive. It's kind of away from the training pitch, how he kind of, I think, gets his player thinking about how he's going to perform on a Saturday, and that takes probably a lot more time than people realise. And as you say, once you're going to get a bit of taste for his environment, I think you can see exactly why Ireland are consistently performing, because there's no chance really of kind of having highs and lows under them. If you have a bad day, it's probably a 6 out of 10, you know?
Yeah.
Lads, we're going to move on to chat about the Lions. Kev last week was pretty doom and gloom in the studio. We were chatting to Hamish Bidwell and he sounded very, very smug. But a week later, a win, and I know a defeat, but another decent performance. Things seem a lot more positive now, don't they?
A bit more positive, I'd say. Like the win against Crusaders is huge. Like, I was watching it, I was thinking this just has the feel of a test match. Like the amount of Kiwis on the Crusaders team and the intensity of it, and it just felt like cup match rugby, the way both teams are playing. Really disappointing, like the lack of execution by the Lions, because they could have scored 2-3 tries and actually won the game quite comfortably. I thought it was interesting the way the Lions dominated the set piece to a certain extent, in that they got like 4 penalties. The Crusaders lost their first 3 lineouts. Like Pete got a great steal, a couple of bits like that. But then the New Zealand media were absolutely kicking up about the scrum and the referee's interpretation of it. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting subplot that's going on through this tour. Is there's no doubt that the Lions have to dominate a set piece to win a test game, to win a test game, like, never mind the series. So the fact that they got dished up in the second half against the Highlanders in the scrum is a massive talking point. The fact that it actually looked like physically the Crusaders were probably just about on top in the scrum the time they ran over the top of them, and then they ran over them a couple more times, but it was illegal or whatever. But it's something the Lions need to really sort out, like, and make sure that they're on top of. And I suppose one of the things they'll be having an internal conversation with Graham Rowntree about is they can't wait for the referee to look after them. And I think Raynal actually reffed it quite well, in that Joe Moody was walking around Tyke Furlong and that's why he gave the penalty. But not every referee is going to pick that up. Yeah. And like, I think most referees will actually just see who's getting the nudge forward, and that's what it's going to go off. And I actually think that's going to have a huge impact on whether the Lions can actually even be competitive on this tour. They need to dominate the scrum, there's no doubt about it. So
yeah, they have a pretty strong pack for the game against the Murray All Blacks on Saturday. Vunipola, Jamie George and Tag Furlong front row, Itoje and Cruz in the second row, Peter O'Mahony captains the side at 6, Sean O'Brien and Toby Faletau there as well.
My back row, I reckon. That's
9-10 is Murray and Sexton. In centre you have Ben Teo and Jonathan Davies. On the wings, George North and Anthony Watson, and Lee Halfpenny at fullback. Rog, what do you make of that team?
Yeah, it's a good team. I think it's interesting now. I think I suppose there's subplots all over. I can't decide on what midfield he's going to go with for the tests. I think you could pick probably 8 players into 3 positions at 10, 12 and 13, which I don't think is a good thing. I think the definites in the backs to start would be Conor Murray, George North, I would think. Liam Williams is probably a banker on the other wing.
Halfpenny,
you think?
He's shooing the place kick, no?
I don't get it. I just think they just...
Who starts there instead of him? Who starts at
15?
Yeah.
I think they're going to have Farrell kicking, and I think they're going to go with
Watson.
Watson, you know, or Payne?
I think they might play Payne.
I'd be shocked.
His defence has been good.
No, I agree, and he hasn't done enough in attack, but I think his body is hurting him a bit at the minute. Calf, it looks like that he just hasn't shaken that off, but I think the amount of time players in Irish camp have for Jared Payne, his name came up on numerous occasions in the US among players and coaches. I think someone was at an event in London and they were talking about Jared Payne as well, the feedback from the Lions coaches. So I think it could be an outsider for 15. I wouldn't, you know, Anthony Watson, I don't think there was talk of him playing at 15. I think Kev is right though. I think why did they bring Halfpenny kind of out of the blue to on the Lions tour when his form for Toulon has been pretty average? His form for Wales has been pretty average, but I think he's obviously a machine for kicking goals.
This must be a chance for him then. Like, this is a chance for him then this weekend to stake a claim. Like, and another absolutely massive game. Yeah, like, and look who he's up against, that back three from the Mary All Blacks as well.
I'm surprised to hear you say Faz is going to kick. Like, surely he's missed 2 like really important kicks now. Halfpenny starting the test. Like, surely Gat's going to bring the metronome in for the test.
Everything I would say points to that, but I just think to beat New Zealand, I think you're going to have to score what, more than 25 points? Maybe not the way kind of who would have said. I think you look at the game, as you said, at the Crusaders 12-3, it's like a 1948 game. because as you said, Kevin, had that feel about it where it was kind of pressure,
points, field position, which doesn't happen when the Crusaders play, because we all know in Super 15, like, some of the scores can be 53-36. But that their system has been exposed before. If you get line speed against the Crusaders, they can't get to their pods in the wide channels, and that's exactly what Andy Farrell did. So you can see here, we haven't even, we've been 5 minutes trying to discuss 10, 12 and 13, and I think it goes like that throughout the team. You look, Kev will talk about the back row.
Yeah.
You know, I think, are they going to leave Warburton out of the team? I don't think they are.
Before Kev, we get to that, yes. Can I ask you just a bit more about the 10 position? So Johnny Sexton has the jersey for Saturday, and people are not sure, it might be Owen Farrell for the first test. What does Johnny Sexton bring to a team that Owen Farrell doesn't, and vice versa? Like, what is the difference at 10 between those two guys?
Well, for me, he's the best defender in the world at 10. You look at, even for that, the final few minutes when the Crusaders, the game, the result was over, but just in terms of Johnny defending there is, there won't be any line breaks there won't be any soak tackles, which is a big area of the game, because it doesn't give the All Blacks front football. So I think he has that, and when he's firing, when he's full of confidence, I think, but for that, I think you see the best of him when Joe's coaching.
They're saying that that Farrell's actually out of this game now as well, and Bigger's on the bench for it because he's got a grade one calf strain there, so all of a sudden that's thrown a bit of a like spanner into the works there, hasn't it, with all of a sudden Sexton could beat at 10, like, and then it could be decided by injury, but they could just be playing it safe again and just
stinks if he's got a tight calf. They're just not risking him, like, I would guess, but
no, you're
great,
right,
opportunity for Johnny all the same, like, to actually get to play with what is shaping up as the test team.
Yeah,
because the midweek team hasn't been firing, but like the way the guys played last week, if they can build on that again this week, like, this is, I'd say, probably 12 of the starters for the test game next week.
But it looks like too that Johnny won't get an opportunity to kick, doesn't it, in terms
that's
of they've picked half penny at 15 again this weekend.
But like, that pisses him off, I'd say, but it frees him up maybe. Like, is it, what's it like going into, have you ever gone into a game not kicking?
No, I wouldn't let anyone else kick.
Never. You never?
No, because it's your bread and butter.
Yeah. So you think it might actually throw him off?
No, because I'd say from 4 years ago he probably reverts to that. But like, you can talk to him about that, and he just, it's as you, it's probably, you know what I mean, it's like a striker, and he's not allowed to take the penalties.
Yeah.
If he's fouling the box, there's just something missing. You know, like, you just need that pressure.
Honestly,
you need
that. So you wouldn't have felt like going into a massive, I don't know, Grand Slam game, for instance, and suddenly, for whatever reason, you're not kicking. You're saying, I'm good at about this, but actually I can concentrate more in other areas of my game now.
Because I think it's too much.
Too big a change. Like.
Yeah, it's just too much of a kind of disappointment, I would think. You know what I mean? You have to put team first, obviously. But like, why do you do all the sacrifices? Why do you do all the kicking to get a shot at this? And you know, Kev, the great thing, as you know, in sport is that you can sleep even if you fail. It's not getting that shot. Mm-hmm. You just want to have that go. If you miss, everyone hates you, but you don't hate yourself. You've had a crack off it. That would be the way I'd be going at it, you know? I think you just want to put yourself up in Eden Park in front of everyone booing you, and you go, oh yes, please give me this, I want this.
Well, that's the attitude you have to have, I suppose. It's like flipping on its head, because like, I think for most 95% of people, they'd be like, I want the ground to swallow me up here, like, so much pressure here, I actually just want to like dive on the ground.
No, but then it's for, I think, when you're at the start of your career, but I think once you get confidence and know you can do it, then you just can't take it away from you. You just go, like, it's, you're just taking away all my character here.
So did you used to love them when there was a really hard kick and you're like, say Paulie or whoever, as Draco was captain, they pointed the post without even looking at you, because they're just backing you, like?
Yeah, and it got to the stage with Paulie and Draco, they wouldn't ask me, and there was times I was kind of like ratty when they pointed, you're kicking this, you're kicking this. And there's times like you'd love an all discussion. And it goes back to all these debates. Remember, I think in games about kicking to the corner, and I was exactly the same. I'd opt out and kick to the corner because you fancy the line-out drive as opposed to having to take that massive pressure and kick at the post. But like, that's when a really good captain comes in and takes that decision away from you. He knows what you're capable of. The angle on the pitch doesn't really come into it. He knows if you hit it well, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
So he just kind of goes, posts.
Yeah.
And you're like, nice one.
Kev, want to ask you about the pack here. I guess Alan Wynne-Jones and Sam Warburton, they're two guys that maybe at the start of the thing we thought they would start the first test. But do you like the look of this combination as a whole?
Personally, I'd be bringing Alan Wynne-Jones in for Itoje. I think Itoje is class off the bench for like the last 30 minutes. Come in, bring up the line speed, a couple of carries. But I wouldn't be starting Warburton. I just don't think he adds enough. I'd be 50-50 between Peter O'Mahony and Tupuric. I think like they both bring different things. But I think O'Mahony gives us far more in the line-out, whereas Tupuric is just like an incredible link man and brings something different. But I'd 100% be starting Shawnee and Faletau. I think they've got what it takes at this level to actually beat the All Blacks and like actually win a test game. And I think Faletau was, along with Murray, were the Lions' best players last week against Crusaders.
What are you seeing with Warburton? Like, people are talking about him not being, he's a yard off the pace. Are you seeing that as well? Are you seeing something that he's not up to it, or is that just Warburton?
I just see what Warburton does all the time. Like, he's a class player, but I don't think he's what the Lions need to beat the All Blacks. And I said that, I think, 6 weeks ago when we were discussing our squad selection, is he shouldn't be a test starter. And he will be a test starter. Like, I'm like 90% confident that Gats will pick him. But I don't think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But
is Warren Gatland the only man who thinks it is the right thing to do?
That's a really good question. I would say there's probably a lot of Welsh people that back him up. I don't know, because like Warburton's a hero there. But I think it has to be obvious for everyone to see what Shawnee brings that Warburton doesn't. Like, that's clear as day. And Shawnee gives you a lot of the ruck pressure, defensive ruck pressure that Warburton brings, on top of like an amazing ball carrying game, a link game, and the X factor. Like,
yeah,
and he showed a hint of that X factor against the Crusaders. And I think he can do it against the All Blacks. Like, he knows what it takes to beat them, like, and he's done it before, and he's played against them, I don't know, probably 10 times at this point. Like,
that back row of like O'Mahony, let's say if it was O'Mahony, Warburton, Faletau, just doesn't, like, it's just like dogs of war kind of a combination, isn't it? Doesn't strike you as a kind of, how are they going to do damage to the All Blacks and make them think twice about things? Whereas, it'd be too late then to put Stander or O'Brien in at six because they haven't had a crack at it. So
yeah, potentially. And like, the thing about Faletau, like, he's an amazing player. I think he plays okay for Bath, then he plays really well for Wales, and then Lions time he steps up again.
He
just has that element, the class, that the higher the level the better he plays, and he's got to be a starter.
But I just wanted to chat about Peter O'Mahony getting the captain's armband. Like, at the start of the tour, like, his form towards the end of the season was pretty good, but I mean, I'm not sure a lot of people would have thought he might have started the first test, but now he's captaining the Saturday out from the first test. That's a huge impact he's made there, Rog.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And it's a huge honour for him, and something he'd be absolutely delighted with, but I think Kev has it right. I think there's two definites in the back. I think Sean O'Brien and Faletau are nailed on, and I think this is a nice way of saying, Peter, you're captaining against the Maoris, but you won't be playing in the first test.
Really, yeah.
That's the way I can remember in 2009, I got kind of the captaincy for the emerging Springboks, which means, you know what I mean, you're not going to get good news on the Saturday. It's kind of the way of saying, fair play, but welcome to the midweek team.
Right, okay. One thing I wanted to mention as well, a lot of talk this week about Gatland not showing his full hand. When you look at that team, what do you think he is holding back? Is he holding back a late call-up maybe someone like Zebo or something like that, or what is he holding back?
I don't think that's...
He's going balls out to win these games.
Yeah?
He's holding nothing back, I guarantee you. They need more than holding things back, they need wins to build confidence.
Okay.
He's throwing absolutely everything at these games, I guarantee you.
I thought the bench was interesting to me. Like, who's on the bench? Like, Sinclair's on it, Henderson's on it, Stander's not on it. Like, does that give you an idea? Like, all of a sudden you're thinking Stander's now going to be the sub, the impact sub off the bench. He'll get a bit of a run out on Tuesday against the Chiefs, and then, like, you can't see Stander starting now. Well,
yeah, I don't know. And if you rewind, 3 months ago he was the foreign player in the world with the most metres made, but I think
all of a sudden momentum seems to be with other people. So it depends, I suppose, what criteria they have for selecting.
Yeah,
it'd be very interesting in how they go about that, because it's for me, yeah, it's hard to know which way they'll go. But I think, as you said about Henderson, I think he was the best player against the Highlanders, and he offers something different against the All Blacks. And to reiterate Kevin's point, I think you need to do different things, and his footwork, I think, on the gain line is different to a lot of the other players. And I think he has the good role of second row, back row, bench option. He has a good offload game, and I think that's what you see from him, I think, consistently for Ulster. And it was great to see him do it in a Lions jersey. I think he will be on the bench.
Yeah, you reckon?
I think he need to be very adaptable.
You can imagine a Toje and Henderson or something on the bench would be.
For me, a Toje will definitely start though.
Okay, yeah. I'm just going to go around the table. Predictions. Will the Lions beat the Maoris on Saturday, Pat?
I think they will. Yeah, this could be their last win of the tour, but I think they'll win this Saturday.
Kev?
Yeah, I think they'll win. Yeah, Lions will win.
I'm not too sure. I was involved in this game. Is it 12 years ago? And the Maoris are. They will be so up for it.
Yeah,
I think when you talk about tradition and respect, these guys get into a different zone for this. It was actually, I think this is where we spotted Rua Tupoki.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I think the Maori are a fierce, proud tribe, and it'll be a fascinating game. I think I just can't wait to see the likes of Milner Scudder, Dame McKenzie, Dave James Lowe. It was interesting listening to Dan last night talk about just what it means to the home players that are playing too. We all get excited over here about the great thing about being on a Lions tour, but for anyone playing rugby in New Zealand, it only happens once every 12 years, so they look upon it as an opportunity of a lifetime. And I think, as Kev said about, they need momentum, they need confidence. They were 22-13 up against the Highlanders in an indoor stadium. They should never have, I suppose, even let them back into the game, never mind lose the game. So I think the momentum could be completely different. It would have been two consecutive results. The Lions would have been a lot more confident. Now it seems like they're a little bit away from a panic button being pressed again, and that's not a good place to be before test week.
Great stuff, we'll leave it there. Roger, going to let you go, but up next we've Andy Rowe from the Rugby Pod to talk about the Maori All Blacks and the New Zealand team to face Samoa on Friday.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember, Raj, Kev in the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Thanks for listening to the podcast today. If you are listening for the first time, you can subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every other good podcast app to get it straight to your phones on Thursday afternoons. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to chat a bit about the Maoris and New Zealand with Andy Rowe from the Rugby Pod. Andy, how's the form?
Yeah, the form was pretty good with the backline for the Maori team. Are you talking about the team form or my form? What was the question there?
They're probably linked, aren't they, Andy?
Yeah. No, I was asking you, how's the form with yourself, actually, Andy?
Yeah. I was halfway through talking then, and I realised maybe that was just an Irish thing where you're like, what's the crack?
But good insight into the Kiwis' mindset there. Yeah, literally their form is directly linked to how the team is doing, the team that selected whether they've won or not.
That's funny. Yeah, scrum's good. Not enjoying the interpretation of the green, but yeah,
the
form's good.
Andy, just off the back of the last two results, we had the podcast last Thursday, and since then, the Lions beat the Crusaders, and the last of the Highlanders. We're feeling a bit better about it on this side of the world, but how are the Kiwis feeling after those two games?
I think the arrogant levels are still quite high, to be honest. Looking at the press and the media and the way that they read into it, because of course I'm based in London, but I read a lot of the press from both sides, and at the moment it's funny because it's almost like the English press versus the Kiwi press, and the Telegraph and the Daily Mail over here versus the New Zealand Herald, and it's just a giant sort of who knows more about rugby situation and who's more entitled. That's kind of like what I'm reading into it at the moment. But as far as confidence levels goes, the Crusaders were always going to struggle against the top line team, weren't they? Like that's probably your test team, isn't it? And then the other Super Rugby sides always had a shot at tipping them up. Because they're firing up against the midweek teams. But as far as for me personally, my confidence is going to come down to who's refereeing the game. Because
we saw your tweet there the other day, Andy. Your tweet was referee interpretations are going to be a massive talking point this series. So you really feel strongly about this?
Well, I think we've seen it. We've seen it in the. You know, the Crusaders pack, it wasn't that, you know, and they've been dominant all year, and that's how they've been winning games. Their back line, they've got a young back line with not that much experience. They've got Israel Dagg there, but he's coming back from injury. But otherwise, they had been relying on forward dominance. And as soon as you take that away, that's a basic fundamental of rugby, isn't it? As soon as you take away forward dominance, you're going to struggle. And we saw the French referee, and I'm not saying that the French referee was bad, because he wasn't. It was just an interpretation thing. And the confusing part for me is, why are Northern Hemisphere referees and Southern Hemisphere referees interpreting the scrum differently? It should be such a basic thing to be able to follow. The scrums aren't basic, but you know, the interpretation of the scrum time should be down the line, and everyone should be singing off the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, I still like just
and that's going to cause trouble for both teams.
Yeah, like,
depending on who's refereeing.
For me, watching it, like, so I think Matthew Reynal actually probably technically got a ride, and that Joe Moody was walking around a little bit. But I agree, like, the majority of referees look at that and say Crusaders have physical dominance. They're getting a nudge in the scrum here. I'm going to penalise the Lions. Mm. But the one thing that I'd be slightly concerned about from a Kiwi point of view is that they didn't adapt. So they gave away about four or five penalties, whatever it was, in the scrum. And they clearly weren't listening to the referee. You could see Joe Moody kind of just shaking his head in disgust every time it happened, because he felt like he was on top. But rather than actually pulling in together and saying, guys, the ref is clearly not liking what we're doing here. Let's change it. Let's maybe attack the loose head side instead of the tight head side or whatever, and change up their tactics a little bit. But you're exactly right. But like, there's two French referees in the tests. Yeah. So like... It's definitely something the All Blacks are going to have to look at as a potential issue. And it's something the Lions, like, I have no doubt in the world, are going to have to dominate the set piece if they have a chance of winning the test.
Yeah, Jerome Garth says is the referee for the second test, and Roman Poit for the third test. Have you played under those guys, Kev?
I have, yeah. I think Jerome Garth says is probably one of the best referees in the world, in my mind. I'm not sure if the Southern Hemisphere people would consider that to be true, but... Roman Poit as well doesn't take any nonsense, and he'll go in with a clear interpretation and he'll back it. So it's going to be up to both teams to adapt to what the referees are looking for. But Andy, it's really interesting that you think there's a clear difference in the way the Southern Hemisphere referees are looking at particular details like the scrum. I actually think it's the same at the ruck. I think in Southern Hemisphere they're probably a little laxer in terms of the laws at the ruck. All these interpretations are going to be absolutely critical. Well, I hope they're going to be critical if it's a tight test series.
One thing that Southern Hemisphere referees tend to do more is on-field coaching, which you don't have to do, of course, but that does happen, that they will talk to the players and tell them what they're doing and tell them what their expectations are during the game. So I mean, that's one part of it that was a change that they'll have to adapt to as well. But also, with Steve Hansen and the All Blacks, they pride themselves on making sure that they do understand who's reffing them, and they make quite a big deal about it, and they've spoken about it publicly quite a bit in other test series and other tours, especially coming over here to the Northern Hemisphere, where they do take a lot of time to get to know and study the referee before they play under them. But so I don't think that it will be a massive concern for the All Blacks when it comes down to the test matches. I mean, once they're out there, it might be, but I think they'll be thinking at the moment that we've just got to study these referees and make sure we're on the same page when it comes to kickoff. My concern for the Lions will be that I think that Scott Robinson, the Crusaders coach, got caught out by not doing that before the Crusaders played against the Lions. My concern for the Lions is that Warren Gatland didn't do that with the Southern Hemisphere referee. I think it was Angus Gardner against the Highlanders. He, as an international coach, that's something that he's sort of missed the boat on there, I think. He should have been studying that referee, making sure that they had clear interpretations and understanding that they are going to referee the game differently, and every referee does, unfortunately. But that's something that maybe is an advantage in the All Blacks case.
Yeah, can we just take a look ahead to Saturday, and the Maori All Blacks named a really strong side. Can you just take us through the starting 15?
Yeah, so you've got Caton Haynes and Ash Dixon, Ben May in the front row, and Ash Dixon is captain in the side, and then Joe Wheeler and Tom Franklin. It's not the strongest type five, but it's still Super Rugby level. And then it's a very good loose forward trio on Akira Ioane, who's an All Black in waiting. I don't think has he played a test? I don't think he's played a test yet, but he's been in and around the squad. Elliot Dixon at seven. He's played a few games for the All Blacks. And then the experience of Liam Messam at number eight, and we know what he can do. So that pack is a solid pack without being exceptional. That's of course where the Lions will be wanting to attack the Māori team, because if that pack can mix it with the Lions and gain some parity, then that back line that the Māoris have got, and Tawhiri Kurbalo and Damien McKenzie at 9 and 10, they've got a good relationship from playing at the Chiefs, although McKenzie would play at fullback for the Chiefs. Mm. However, the All Blacks want him to be looked at as a 10. I think they think he might be a bit small to be playing at fullback, especially when you've got Geordie Barrett coming through, who's at the same size as his brother, who plays lock. And then Damien McKenzie has also played at first five for Waikato in the provincial championship, played scoreboard rugby at 10 as well. So he is a quality first five. So he does have that relationship with Tawhiri Kurbalo, both exciting players. So that'll be interesting to see how quickly he adapts there. And then you've got in the centres Charlie Nartai and Matt Proctor. Charlie Nartai, he's had a lot of time out of the game with concussion over the last year, but he would be a potential All Blacks starter if he hadn't been injured. And when he's come back, he has been in good form. He's very robust, makes a lot of line breaks. He's a good link player as well. So that back line is looking pretty sharp from there. And then you go out to the outside backs, where you've got Rico Ioane and Nehe Milne-Scudder on the wings, who are both exceptional players with ball in hand, very, very dangerous. And James Lowe, who a lot of people have been singing their praises about, maybe being in the All Blacks squad, and a lot of Chiefs fans not very happy that he missed out. He's been in some great form this year. I understand he's coming over to see you guys next season.
Yeah, Kev, have you seen a lot of James Lowe? He looks like such an exciting talent.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of him. He seems to be a bit of a try-scoring machine, have lots and lots of pace, and like part of that Chiefs team that just have an incredible appetite to play rugby and score tries. So I think he's like and be an amazing signing for Leinster. I think he could like help take Leinster's back play to the next level and like bring a lot of what the Chiefs do over to the club as well. And you know, you could see what, say, Nasir was able to bring over from the Blues to Leinster. I think like he'll bring what the Chiefs are doing and bring some ideas and stuff. I think he's a great signing.
I'm personally glad that Lowe is not getting capped for the All Blacks before he comes over to Ireland, because Jared Payne will be around 34 in 3 years' time and he might slot right in there.
Wishful thinking. Andy, just in terms of seeing all those individuals on that starting 15, I know they haven't had a lot of time to kind of train and all that kind of stuff, but how do you think that team is going to play on Saturday morning?
They will be hoping that they get a little bit of counter-attacking ball. It'll depend on how the British and Irish line allow them to play. I think the ball is in the court of the British and Irish lines. If they want to play like they played against the Crusaders and make the other team play a tight game, then that'll just smother the Māori All Blacks. Māori All Blacks play with a lot of passion, a lot of flair. Mm. They'll be wanting to find open space and run the ball from anywhere. They'll play it very much like a barbarian type of rugby if they can. And so it's really going to be up to the British and Irish Lions to dictate the way the game's played. And they can do that as far as they did it in the Crusaders situation. And this is what you'd think is probably looking like the test side for the British and Irish Lions with that full pack, isn't it? So it'll be interesting. But I think the Lions should win this one and should win it comfortably if they play to their set piece and play to their pan.
Yeah, there he is, setting us up again.
Every week you Kiwi guys are setting us up for this, giving us a little bit of hope, a little bit of confidence, and then bang, it doesn't work. But I also wanted to just mention the New Zealand team to face Samoa. I guess it's their kind of warm-up match for the test. The game's on Friday. Obviously, maybe just take us quickly through the team, I suppose, Andy, and we'll go from there.
Okay, yeah, so it's a standard four pack. So you've got Joe Moody, Cody Taylor, and Owen Franks in the front row. Dane Coles, he's not back yet, still struggling with concussion, but there are good signs of Dane Coles. He may be available for one of the later test matches. Brody Retallick and Sam Whitelock in the locks. And then we've got Kano, Sam Kane, and Artie Sevier gets a start at number eight, which is very exciting. Of course, very, very good with ball in hand, very quick, very fast, and very dominant in the tackle area as well. Aaron Smith and Bowden Barrett, always exciting to see those guys playing at 9 and 10, because that pass from Aaron Smith, it creates so much space for Bowden Barrett to run, and when he runs, he can be devastating. And then Sonny Bill Williams makes his first test comeback since the 2015 Rugby World Cup final. And he's paired with Anton Leonard-Brown. So those two players are very, very good at offloading. So we'll be expecting to see the ball in play a lot, and especially with Sonny Bill and his offloads. And then Dag Smith at captain at fullback and Jordan Sevier on the left wing. Israel Dag, for me, has to have a huge game, because there are some quality wings that are breathing down his neck trying to get into that test side. You've got Rico Ioane, and then who will be looking for a good game for the Māori and trying to force his way into the test side. Substitute bench with Nathan Harris, White Crockett, Charlie Farmawina in the front row, and then Scott Barrett in the second row. So you've got three Barrett brothers in the side with Geordie Barrett. He's also on the bench. And TJ Perenara, Lema Sopoanga on the bench as well. Sopoanga, of course, getting a start on the bench with Aaron Cruden being out injured. And then the debutant via Fafita. Don't know much about him, going to be honest with you. But, he's the one bolter in the squad.
Yeah, is that pretty much close to the test team? I mean, is there anybody missing out there that will definitely be back in next week?
There could be Ryan Crotty. He is looking likely that he could be back for the first test. Just reading some articles about him today, so he could be back, and that would change up that midfield. I would have thought they'd start with Ryan Crotty if he's available, and then one of the wings, I think, unless Dag has a great game, he could be on the chopping block. And the only other change is Aaron Smith and TJ Perenara, who plays better in this test, could dictate who starts at nine. And then you've got number eight, Artie Sevier, is probably not going to start the first test. You wouldn't have thought with Kieran Reid coming back for the first test. But otherwise, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Is Kieran Reid back playing?
To see how Jordy Barrett goes. Yeah.
Is Kieran Reid
back playing? He's not back playing, no.
Okay.
No, he's not back playing.
But like, if he doesn't play a game before the first test, will they still draft him in? Is he that type of player, you think, that could just...
100%.
Yeah, okay.
100%. They've done it before, and they are confident that because this is what they've done with Jerome Kano. They just work on their aerobic skills, so they're going to be fit enough to play, and then they just know that they can, if they can get 60 minutes out of him, which he should be able to do quite easy. And let's face it, the Lions aren't going to play a really, really high speed game, are they? So he should be able to get through 60 minutes at least.
Great stuff, Andy. Thanks for telling us about that terrifying team that the Lions are going to face next week. We'll leave it there, Andy. Thanks so much for that. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Andy.
Cheers, Andy.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
That is Andy Rowe from the Rugby Pod joining us from London this morning. Guys, I mean, going through that New Zealand team, it's like fantasy rugby, isn't it, some of those guys? I mean, it's a serious, serious task facing the Lions.
Yeah, when they're talking about Dag being like a massive weak link, how's he in there? You're pretty worried when you're seeing some of the wingers that are playing for the Maori on Saturday, like Milne Scudder, who you mentioned there, and a couple of guys like that who can come in and put pressure.
Well,
when Dag's feeling that amount of pressure, like it's scary. But like the Lions knew what they were going into and what they were going to be facing. So you know, the only thing like that was interesting he said there is, you know, the pace isn't going to be that high, so Kieran Reid can come in 50-60% fit. And it's like the level of belief and borderline arrogance of the Kiwis is amazing. Like it's just they know and they believe, but like it just says again that the Lions have to up the pace. They have to go for it. They have to throw caution to the wind and do something different. And they can't expect to squeeze the life out of the All Blacks, say, like they did the Crusaders. They have to go and play. And the All Blacks are going to expect them to play like they did against the Crusaders and try and squeeze out a 12-9 victory or whatever. That is not going to work. They're going to have to score 30-plus points. So they have to try and do something different.
Imagine they went out this weekend and just, like, it was a 6-3 win or a 6-all or something like that, and just everybody... It would actually... They could then come in and just try and spark them then in the test series, one hopes. But you just hope that a couple of passes stick, like they weren't sticking in the last couple of games.
You can't switch that on though, Pat. Like the thing is, and against the Highlanders, I saw CJ Stander do something he has never done all season. It was he went into contact and he offloaded post-contact.
Yeah.
And the reason he hasn't had to do that is because he normally goes forward, they recycle and they score the next phase. But obviously they're beginning to learn that he went through contact, he took a risky offload, I think he got it to bigger threw it out to Joseph and they scored a try. I hope that's beginning to click now, that actually players need to start looking to do something different if they're gonna be successful in New Zealand.
Yeah, how hard is that post tackle offload? I mean,
it's incredibly hard. I was terrible at it. Like it's something that, and it's a mindset thing as well, where like I think from the age of like 15 in New Zealand, Australia and some of those places, it's bred into people that they just need to look for off contact, keep it alive, don't die with the ball. Whereas in the Northern Hemisphere, it is definitely related to the weather to a certain extent, but it's more a mentality thing that you take it to the ground, you recycle and you go again. And that's the way Munster played, that's the way CJ plays. He gets over the game line every time, he's amazing at it. But you could see like he was looking to get it away post contact, because they're obviously beginning to realise that you have to try something different, and him being used as a battering ram isn't working.
Yeah, so fingers crossed it's all clicking by next Saturday anyway. Up next, Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes joins us to give us the odds for this weekend's games.
Now when the cups are decided, you have fine weather, but that's probably a 2-month period. You have to do the hard yards.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Excuse the pun.
No, that's perfect. We're going to use that now.
I'm on a bonus for that, definitely. Yeah. Get that in.
The hard yards.
The hard yards.
On Sports Joe. Backed by Ladbrokes.
You're listening to the Hard Yards Rugby Podcast on Sports Show. Thanks a million for listening today. Okay, now let's get some odds for the weekend. Let's make some money this weekend, actually. We have Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes in studio. Hayley, how are you?
I'm very good. Need to make some money as well, actually.
Yeah, lots to get through. We've just spent the last maybe hour talking about about Ireland with Raj, but also a bit about the game on Saturday morning. How do Ladbrokes have this one?
Well, the Lions are clear favourites, so they're currently 2-1 on, and you can back them in the spread -5. But I sort of think that that price is going to come under major pressure, because we're starting to see bits and pieces, punters, good punters, backing them -7. You can actually back them -8 at 6-5 if you're super confident.
What's a good punter? Is that somebody who spends a lot of money with you, or what is it?
Well, Andrew touched on this last week. Like, a good punter is probably someone, it's not the amount of money, it's how often they get it right, so that right, they probably know a bit more than our traders do, like the really pros, basically. And rugby, you get them. American football, you really get them. You have to be very careful there. But anyway, so I think that price could come under pressure. So if you do fancy backing them, I wouldn't hang about. The Maoris are 7-4. But if you think it's going to be a tighter match, the spread for 2 point handicap, and the Lions -2, 4-6, Maoris +2, 5-4, and then again, if you think it's going to be about a 4 point difference, the Lions -4 is 1-3. But I just think that the Maoris, you know, they're a one-off team. They haven't had any time to gel, whereas the Lions look like they're really progressing in terms of how they're gelling. We've been impressed with them defensively, and we just think on Saturday we'd like to see them attacking, which they will.
Yeah, Pat, what do you think about this game on Saturday morning? Is it going to be an open game, or will it be tight, do you think?
It'll be a bit more open then. Well, the Crusaders was open enough, they just didn't finish their chances. But I don't know, I'd be almost tempted that 7-4 for, like, it's tempting, like, you know, 7-4 for the Maoris, like, because they have a great back line. So, like, there'd be a few people who might kind of stick a little bit of money on them. But yeah, that looks like, I think, yeah, -7 actually could be a bit tempting as well for other people who are going the other way, because it's a really good Lions back line as well. Apart from Halfpenny, like the likes of Watson and North getting chances as well, going with the same midfield, all these guys will have played together a little bit more, like, so hopefully things pass a stick and they get a couple of tries to match the forward dominance that they're going to hope to have. So yeah, I kind of think that would be good. Yeah, -7 or 8 points plus for the Lions. Yeah.
Funny enough, we're actually seeing money. People, it's like people are preempting the Lions to have a really good match on Saturday, because we're seeing money for them in the first test match on the 24th.
Yeah.
So it's like people are going, right, they're going to play well and their odds are going to tighten up for the first set test. The test matches haven't fluctuated at all really yet. And plus, we're going to get to see the New Zealand team on Friday when they line up against Samoa. So.
Yeah, and I guess Pat, another week together as well, you know what I mean, in terms of maybe Andy Farrell working on the defence a bit more and just more time together. And Kev spoke about that last week as well, how vital that is.
Yeah, and that was one of the most, because that would have been a game everybody would worry about, like the Crusaders game, but the line speed they had and the fact that they targeted them at the line out and were getting scrum penalties against them, and when Sexton and Farrell came on then together, all of a sudden there's a different element to them again. So it's a shame that won't happen this weekend, but yeah, they have that time to work together. Everybody gets more comfortable with each other. They'll have 2 or 3 days extra training, and every day counts on this tour. You can see they're getting better with each game, so it's kind of fracturing into a midweek weekend team, but this weekend team is looking seriously good at the moment.
Yeah, like, so much speculation about individuals and who's going to be in that first test team next Saturday. From speaking to your guys in Ladbrokes, are there people kind of standing out? Or
yeah, well, I think, like, the likes of, you know, Ian Henderson, he's answered any questions about his selection. Ben Teo, like, really standing out. And that before the news came through about Owen Farrell, you know, that dynamic of, you know, is Sexton going to be in number 10, Farrell in 12 and Ben Teo in 13, or it, you know, what about Teo in 12, you know, but now obviously with his quad strain, hopefully it's not, it's, I think it's grade 1, so he should be back in action soon. But our guys, they've always had a massive love affair for Murray, and he hasn't done anything on this tour to defect any of that affection.
Yeah, Murray will start, Pat, won't he?
Unless
something goes terribly wrong.
Even like, there was one of the Kiwi journalists was talking to all those Crusaders players after the game, and they couldn't believe him. It's even to hear them talking about Murray, it's like, my God, like, it's every one of his box kicks were unbelievable, and he said he was even kicking them above the floodlights, so that it was getting lost in the air and stuff. It's that accurate, and that's how good Murray has been. Like, he's got the ball on a string. So we did a story on Sports Show saying that maybe his passing isn't 100% off his left hand since coming back from injury, but it's not enough to keep him out of that squad. Like, he's playing that well. He's unbelievably well at the moment.
Yeah, he's just world class. Hayley, it's funny, I was talking to you earlier about Royal Ascot, and there's actually a bit of confusion about the Queen's attendance this year. Is it her attendance, or what's going on?
Well, I just find this so funny because a number of people I've worked with and the number of people I know have actually met the Queen quite regularly, right? And she is obsessed with horse racing, right? So she said if she wasn't the Queen that she would be a racehorse trainer, and that's not a lie. Yeah. Like, that's, she gets the racing post every single morning. Yeah, so her and she's very committed to all her royal duties, but she's more committed to horses. But the fact that the Tories have done a deal that's up in the air with the DUP, and that might affect the Queen's speech because it has to be written on some weird thing. It might actually affect her attendance at Royal Ascot, which I'm sure she is absolutely,
she must be going there for 60, 70
like
years.
Off her head, you know, like completely. So I don't think, she definitely won't be wearing an orange hat. So they bet every day when you go to the bookies in the morning at Royal Ascot, everybody like has a fiver on what colour hat she's going to be wearing for the royal procession. And it's actually pretty good, big business for us. Like it's a really popular summertime bet.
What's favourite this year?
Oh, I'm not sure. It changes every day, and I'm sure it's going to be like pink or something like that, but or maybe blue because it's been a real kind of Rule Britannia sort of year. So yeah, it's a really popular bet, and also like the great thing about Royal Ascot, like it's all pomp and ceremony, but the Americans are really ramping up their contenders. One of my bet of the week is Lady Aurelia, who won there last year. It's funny, you know, you talk to, like, you hear British horse trainers and you're like, what chances have they got? And they're so conservative about what they say. They're like, oh, you know, it worked well, and, you know, we'd be quietly confident. And Irish people are so cagey, like they'd be like, oh, sure, you know, who knows? Yeah. But the Americans come and they're like, she's a rocket, she's going to win, she's going to break every record. So it like adds loads of dimension. So anyway, Lady Aurelia, she was amazing at the royal meeting last year. She's running on Tuesday, and I'd back her.
Great stuff. Can we also get a prediction on the hat colour? What do you think?
I'm going to go with the blue, I think, on Tuesday. Yeah.
Pat, what would you wear if you were the Queen?
I think a sombre grey to kind of sum up the mood. Sort this shit out. Get a government together.
Yeah, we'll see. I might just go with red. Maybe she's a big Lion supporter as well.
Yeah, exactly.
She might wear a red hat. Just tied that back into rugby. There.
It was nice.
Really, really good. Okay, guys, we'll wrap up there. A big thanks to Kev. A big thanks to Raj, to Pat, to Andy Rowe, and to Hayley. Thanks to Shane Dempsey, who was on sound. This podcast is on every Thursday, so you can subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone, so there's no hassle involved. I've been Joe Harrington. Thank you so much for listening this week, and we will talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.